You're listening to the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting live in Los Angeles, and you're listening to it on KPFK Los Angeles, WBAI in New York, KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley, and KFCF in Fresno. We're going to have some people from the KPFT area who are here.
My name is Michael Pimentel. I'm originally from here in L.A. I was one of the founding members of the KPFK listeners group. Gone but not forgotten, certainly. In Houston, I'm a member of the KPFT lab. I'm a member of the Houston Committee for People's Radio. And, you know, it really saddens me to, you know, I didn't hear Dwayne mention the day of, the so-called day of solidarity throughout the network. Now, I have to sadly inform you that for most of the day, KPFT was not broadcasting that particular programming. It saddens me deeply. I think it was a terrible chance, an opportunity that was missed, because there was some great programming broadcast throughout that day. That's one critical thing I have to say. With respect to the resolution Deb mentioned about local news department, actually the resolution basically what it does is it establishes it's intended to establish a KPFT news department with a news director. And it directs the news department to undertake the development of an internship program, which I think is vital to the future of KPFT. Obviously, you know, we've addressed that. What I would like to see from the board here is resources for that as soon as possible to be directed to KPFT. There are a lot of other concerns I have, but I'll probably be voicing those later with respect to the proposal to set up a democratization committee or a bylaws committee here. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I should point out, speaking of things that KPFT isn't broadcasting, today's broadcast is one of them, as will be tomorrow's two-hour call-in show, neither of which is on KPFT.
Local advisory board and one of the charter members of HCPR, Houston Committee for People's Radio. First of all, I want to make a couple of observations. This is the most mellow Pacifica board meeting I've been to. There are no police. There are no security guards. We're not in a posh, upscale, DoubleTree hotel. We're in a school gymnasium. This is great. It's such a great feeling here. And the other observation I want to make is that Dwayne has done an excellent job so far. And the process is incremental. It has to be incremental but deliberate and keep moving forward. And I think Dwayne has done an excellent job in that regard. I think the third observation I want to make, which is related to the first, is that this is really historic because we've won. You know, how many times in the past 20 years have we, the progressive movement, really won anything? We have this now, so what are we going to do with it? I know that there are a lot of factions and there are a lot of people who have very deep differences about what to do with what we have. And the thing that really bothers me when these factions get entrenched. And I really want to speak to everybody that we really need to start talking to each other about these differences and working towards some kind of reconciliation of these differences. Because there's a lot of energy that's get wasted in factionalization and infighting. And he said, she said, he's this, she's that. So we all really need to work together, folks. We all really need to come together to bring this thing together to make it work, because we still have a very strong risk that we can lose it. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
The non-police and non-security guarded school that the speaker was referring to is the Virgil Middle School Auditorium at Vermont and First in Los Angeles. And those of you who may be interested in coming down here, there's food in the school courtyard, there's free parking in one of the school parking lots, and we'll be here till 6 o'clock tonight and from 9 till about 1 tomorrow with the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting, the Virgil Middle School Auditorium, Vermont and First. This is Tony Regusters, the Interim General Manager, WPFW Washington.
Full programming resulting in progressive action. That's my vision for Pacifica's WPFW-FM. Having assumed the post of Interim General Manager at WPFW in the first week of February 2002, I have met head-on and with a dedication to excellence, honesty, integrity, attention to detail, a profound sense of mission grounded in the tenets of the Pacifica Code, a deep sensitivity to staff and listener issues, a wide, wide array of extraordinary challenges, some of the most daunting in my 30 years as a professional in media and communications. On assuming this important post at a time when Pacifica itself is in a desperate state of affairs but is rising like a progressive phoenix, with the station essentially rudderless and sounding more like a top 40 vehicle than a Pacifica station, I found a work environment so toxic and poisonous that it literally gave me a pain in the heart. When I walked into WPFW, I felt like I had been attacked by an embodiment of malevolence. The old WPFW of 3 months ago, before Verna Avery Brown relieved Lou Hankins of his command, was a place where psychological intimidation and threats were used as a modus operandi for employee and community relations. My first task, therefore, was clear. Before even contemplating any of the necessary changes that would need to be made to restore progressive thought to the airwaves, I had to first take action to transform the actual work environment itself, promote healing from within. I set about accomplishing this by directly challenging those on staff who had assumed that mantle of bad habits and negative human relationships endorsed and encouraged by previous management, and made crystal and forcefully clear my own intentions and management philosophy. I will be fair and treat you with respect, but if you will not demonstrate respect for this environment or your sister or fellow employee, there will be no place for you at WPFW. Additionally, during my first week, I met with all WPFW staff members personally and called a general meeting of the station's entire on-air programming staff to explain myself and elicit their support and trust. This had the net effect of easing fears and creating a high level of expectation for positive change. My aim was to assure everyone that any program changes I would make would be made with thoughtfulness and deliberation, that I would not just snatch people off the air as the last manager did. Instead, I would be sensitive to the audience and the individual programmer and measure every decision I made based on facts and empirical necessity. Everyone agreed that this was reasonable. They also understood, as I honestly explained, that changes would definitely have to be made, especially in terms of restoring a balance of progressive voices. Everyone understood that and agreed that it was necessary. I also promised, on my honor, that I would not take action that will result in jazz or any of the other music forms which the station is a last haven and platform being totally eliminated from WPFW's airwaves, but did again emphasize that we needed more progressive balance. Having fairly and respectfully put my air team on the same page, I then proceeded to rally both paid and volunteer staff to perform at top form during a pledge drive scheduled for now, my third week on the job. Probably, I explained to them, this would be the most critically important pledge drive in WPFW's 25-year history, coming again at a most difficult and uncertain period, not only for WPFW, but for the Pacifica Foundation itself. In making their presentations, I urged everyone to speak from the heart, tighten up their on-air persona, project positive, confident voices filled with hope and trust. And as they made their pitches to new and renewing members, there was definitely a new, profound sense of mission in the presentation. And I'm proud to say that WPFW, even with the extraordinary KPFK Save Our Signal national broadcast, eliminating much of a possibility of acquiring pledges for WPFW that day, or losing an additional day of pledges to the station because of a problem with phones due to a programming snafu, which was caused by Verizon, for totals of $40,000 in projected pledges, WPFW nevertheless achieved its financial goal, raising $350,000 in pledges. Thank you. I do, however, give complete credit for this excellent achievement to WPFW's transformed and reinvigorated paid staff and on-air volunteer programmers, all of whom truly love the station, their work, and the community we have served, and will serve better in the days, weeks, months, and years ahead. A major staff concern for me, however, is the absence of an engineer or operations manager and a program director. A top priority of mine as interim general manager was to proactively reach out to Sam Husseini, chair of the local advisory board, to formally invite and welcome the Washington, D.C. lab back onto the premises of WPFW. The lab had been illegally banned and locked out by the previous general manager. I promised and assured members of the lab and other concerned progressive groups in the Washington, D.C. community of my desire to restore progressive and activist content to the airwaves. I also said that at the same time, as a member of the African-American community from which jazz finds its genesis, I would not be party to eliminating this cultural icon from WPFW's program schedule. My goal, I explained, was to build bridges and reestablish balance. The key for me as a progressive communicator, broadcast manager, and journalist was to bring balance to the airwaves, balancing and counterpointing progressive dialogue and debate within a creative signature framework of jazz. I also informed both groups, programmers, and lab members that I would take the time to make deliberate and informed decisions about any program changes. In the meantime, there are some technical problems at WPFW, some of them significant, which include a nitrogen leak at the transmitter site. Clearly, in this situation, I considered that I am not going to be able to please everyone, but then decided that that belief and that remark on my own part was a cliche and a cop-out. I actually do believe that I can please everyone if everyone tries to please everyone else. And if I am fair and honest and listen to all concerned before I act, and when I act, that I take actions to build bridges and consensus, that I establish and walk the talk of Pacifica's enlightened new management paradigm of proactive democratization. In terms of the Washington, D.C. lab, I see this relationship having a potential to establish a model for positive, powerful, and progressive community relations in Washington, D.C., a troubled city where many in the African-American community have been economically and politically marginalized, and where the specter of young, white gentrification looms heavy over the community like the sword of Damocles in a city of taxation without representation. Blacks are distrustful that the white progressive movement is preparing to attempt bringing a gentrification of the airwaves to WPFW. With these challenges before me, I believe that my management and negotiation styles, which are based on mutual respect, open and fearless communication of my own thoughts, and the courage and good common sense to be a listener, will prevail. I have introduced a creative problem-solving style of leadership at WPFW, which honors the Pacifica Code, that is compassionate, and that it does not take the heart out of one group's interest to benefit the heartbeat of another, and finds a place of enlightened consensus, care, and understanding of the big picture, bringing people together under the banner of justice and peace. 89.3 is going to be a place where all who listen may learn and grow. That's my vision of WPFW.
Tony Reguster is the interim general manager of Pacifica Station WPFW in Washington, where incidentally this broadcast is not being heard tomorrow, but our two-hour call-in show tomorrow will be heard. Tony Reguster is, among other things, been press secretary for Congresswoman Maxine Waters and a producer back in 1995 of 100 Days of Congress with Julianne Malveaux and me, Larry Bensky. This is Sam Husseini, chair of the WPFW Local Advisory Board.
I first want to thank Tony so much for having stepped in into what he says quite literally, I know, to have been a poisonous and toxic atmosphere that had been created by the previous management. There had been massive censorship at the station. This means that WPFW listeners not only have very little public affairs and very little programming that fosters a lot of the more political aspects of what Pacifica should mean, but that they had, for example, been any attempt by any program, whether it was Democracy Now! Or Counterspin or Between the Lines or any other show, or PNN in previous times, was totally censored from the airwaves of WPFW. This means that to this date, listeners of WPFW do not know the extent to which this network was almost literally hijacked, do not know the concerted attempt that was made to mainstream this network. We need to undertake, and I think it's probably the one of the foremost things that we need to do, and Tony's reached out and said that he wants to have some mechanism for doing this, you know, using the lab's knowledge and so on, to educate the listeners about what happened and what Pacifica should mean, and to make the Pacifica mission relevant for WPFW, the Washington, D.C. area, in this day and age. The lab has 14 members. We have Nominations Committee, Program Committee, which put together a series of proposals wanting to general outlines of having programming dealing with war and militarism, economic inequality, prison industrial complex, and corporate globalization. We did a community needs assessment report last year, which we hope to do another one. We had a series of meetings at Martin Luther King Library in downtown D.C. Perhaps the most significant finding there, respondents were asked, what kinds of programming would you like to hear more of on WPFW? By far, locally produced reporting on news of community concern was the number one, followed by more public affairs generally, and then news on demonstration, activism, progressive movements. Tony, literally just this week, introduced regular community announcements to be done. There was no mechanism at the station. Indeed, the station was systematically attempting to shut out any kind of community group of saying, please announce our event, anything like that. There is no local news now at WPFW, station in the nation's capital. There's occasional rip and read, like, you know, two or three times a day at the top of the hour, literally off the AP wire, which comes with its own assortment of problems. We were very, I think I speak for the lab when I say we were very, welcoming of the KPFK day of fundraising, which WPFW aired in full. And we're also enthusiastic about that being the possibility of the seeds of a national show, and a national show that would give local programmers the opportunity for a national stage. I think local stations will be much more forthcoming in giving local time to a national show if they get to participate in it in a meaningful fashion. The WPFW lab and other sectors of the reform movement helped with the fundraising effort, used our extensive email lists and other things which we had put together in the reform movement at the disposal, and attempted to drum up support, I think, quite successfully for the recently completed fundraising drive that I know Tony worked so hard on. And I want to emphasize, having seen the station, it literally is a tape and glue and gum. The physical infrastructure of the station is so horrific, and I understand that Tony's literally dealing not only with a toxic environment, but so many systemic problems there that we have to come to grips with. Another main task of the lab, of course, is to come up with a process of a search for and determining of a permanent general manager. One thing that caused I was incredibly grateful that Tony was able to step in and finish that, but he was literally hired in just a few days with no public input, no lab input, and so on. So we need to make sure that the future permanent search is done in a very inclusive way, not just simply of the lab, of the broader community as far in the way as much as that is possible. I think that there's a real craving for more music that's politically relevant and timely, that that it speaks to the legacy of jazz and blues and other forms of music as to their political consequence and relevance, and that they're used that way, not as the past management in many cases. The censorship would literally be done to go to jazz, you know, when they were censoring all of the programming. And jazz itself, a form that spoke against oppression, was used by the previous management as a form of oppression. It reminds me of the U.S. government using human rights or feminism or other things that we've all worked so hard for as a way of pretext for insidious.
WBAI New York.
I want to, what we have to strive for, I think, is a form of mutual accountability, that the lab has to become more proactive, more giving of its energy and resources, and that's been difficult because, the systematic dismemberment of PFW, which was always sort of a weakling and wasn't as political as the other stations, needs to grow from that. And so many people who were banned and fired from WPFW ended over such a longer period of time that it's been much more difficult to reach out to them to try to bring them into the process and to bring other people in the process. But as changes are implemented in the station to signify change, I think that that will begin to attract people who are talented, who are committed to the mission of Pacifica, and as the radicalness of that mission of Pacifica is put out over the airwaves in an articulate fashion on PFW, that will further articulate, will attract people. I hope that there will be some way of broadcasting on PFW some portion of the proceedings here today. I can understand that there is not as vibrant as an activist base in the Washington, D.C. area as yet, as there is, for example, obviously in Berkeley, in the Bay Area, but that message does indeed need to get out. The listeners of WPFW need to be brought into the process to make sure that that's done in a very diverse and inclusive fashion of all communities. Our program committee has also wanted to ensure that our programming reaches out to all ethnic groups, in addition to obviously African American community, the Arab American community, the Asian American community, Latino community, which has swelled substantially in Washington, D.C. since WPFW was first founded. And I know that Tony has some plans about expanding the Latin program, the Spanish language programming, which now does not exist actually, at WPFW. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Sam.
Sam Husseini, chair of the WPFW Washington D.C. Local Advisory Board.
From Washington, signed up Frank Wagner, who also spoke last night, I believe, but we'll let you speak. So just try not to repeat everything you said last night, though.
Madam Chairperson. Let me just...
Let's just hear Frank.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks. And I want to thank Tony and Sam for all the work they've done at PFW. My name is Frank Wagner. I'm a member of the WPFW lab. And, we have a really unique situation at PFW. I mean, it really has been. I mean, it's like a polluted river, you know. I mean, it's really, there's a lot of work to do there. And, but I do think that, you know, and it really has been moving kind of slow. The only real change in PFW is, you know, Democracy Now! And Free Speech Radio News. And I think that, you know, we can get, you know, like we can, you know, we have a Janetta Rose on Tuesday after mornings at 10 to 11 who works for the Washington Times, which is like this moony newspaper, who is really, you know, she's pro-death penalty. She just doesn't speak for Pacifica. And, you know, I know, you know, we have to be sensitive about, you know, removing programmers and stuff, but, you know, a lot of the hijackers are still firmly entrenched in PFW, and you know, I heard somebody from KPFA, or KPFK speaking to the same issue. You know, we need to, you know, we can't always be, you know, like, well, you know, we got to watch who we, you know, deal with here. I mean, you know, they tried to steal our station. They tried to steal our network, you know. We need to get rid of some of these people before any changes happen. I mean, or nothing's going to change. And you know, we're in danger of losing it again. And so, I really appreciate what Tony has done over the past couple of weeks. I mean, I know he came into really like a firestorm. I mean, you know, I know what he came into. I mean, you know, I think he thinks that we're like totally insensitive to that, and we're not. We know what he came into, but by the same token, I also think that, you know, things need to be done that can be done very simply and very quickly, you know, because we need to hear some progressive changes in the station quickly. And one more thing, there was a show on Ambrose Lane on February the 1st where he interviewed Marion Barry, which basically was saying that the lab was self-appointed, a really close-knit group who basically called to get them on the lab, which is really total nonsense. And Marion Barry wasn't even around at the time to say something like that. This is really incredible. But what happened was, you know, we never had access to the radio waves. You know, nobody knew what was going on in Pacifica unless you had access to the internet and access to some other activists, which some of us did, which is where Jabari came from, Sam came from, and all of the lab members. We never even knew each other before we came to the lab. So I just want that to get out there. And, you know, anyway, we need to do a lot of work. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, there is one other person. Reem.
Hello. I'm Reem Katkhuda, and regarding WPFW and organizing Washington, D.C., when we were trying to reclaim the Pacifica Radio Network, we have organized in Washington, D.C., and I want to put some points forth. Everybody talks to the content, which is very important, but the Pacifica Foundation is a whole network where it is also the listenership and also programs to empower the community. And this is extremely relevant in Washington, D.C., where people are so scared because of this shift since September that they don't even dare sign their last name when they're signing up onto things. So the issue of organizing the community is very important. And people talked to what is going to be going on the air, but I think in tandem, the communities that are dying to speak, that don't know in Washington, D.C., that things have changed, need to be given special attention. And if the Pacifica Foundation is to pay organizers, I would say Washington, D.C. should be a priority. Because of the times we're under now, because of what's going on for people here, and particularly people of color and disenfranchised communities, and because of what's going on abroad. And the last thing is, part of the program that needs to happen is to provide a safe haven for people to speak and open up. Washington, D.C. is ready. The different progressive organizations and people talking to speak are all dying to have the airwave, but at the same time we need to reach out to them so that the bridge is there, and when Tony and others start shifting the content, the community is listening, and we're also increasing the listenership in parallel so that it's again a receiver and a transmitter, not just one way, because otherwise we'll alienate the ones that we have and we won't get the other ones that are dying in need of what we can offer. And I wanted to put that forth.
Former District of Columbia Mayor and former City Councilman Marion Barry is here. He's a board member of Pacifica, and he's trying to get recognized. He is now, of course, an announced candidate for re-election to the D.C. City Council.
Tony has done a remarkable job of coming into a situation that was just undescribable. So I think the board ought to realize, I know yes. He gave a good report, that he really has taken hold, yes. Has begun to build the confidence of the listeners. I don't know how the fund drive went, but it well. Seemed to have gone fairly well. And secondly, Frank, what I said, you know, that a number of listeners had complained to me that there was a perception that the local lab was sort of a close group of people. That's all I said.
Okay.
You know, I know how hard it is for you all to have gotten inside. I now think you can. And so that's what I said. So that's not, I understand the point you're trying to make.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's move on, folks. I know we're running late, but again, I'd rather try and finish up all the station reports and then break for lunch. Just so when people know, when we do break for lunch, there will be a listeners meeting, or a meeting of folks active from the all five cities, from the listening community, who are meeting in the auditorium right across from food, which I have no idea where that is. But in any event, you'll be meeting when we break for lunch. And there is lunch on the premises when we do that. So let's go to WBAI. I want to remind people, as we hear the presentation from the station manager, from the lab chair, we also have another presentation at our January meeting. You all will recall this board passed a package of resolutions, and through that mandated the creation of something called the WBAI committee. So we will hear from the chair of that committee as well. So we're going to begin, though, with Valerie Van Isler, the returned station manager at WBAI.
Valerie Van Isler, along with program director Bernard White and many others, were fired and banned in the famous Christmas coup at WBAI a year and a half ago, and is now acting general manager of WBAI.
This morning, that this is a historic time for Pacifica and for each of us as we renew and recommit ourselves to the mission and the vision of Lou Hill. But it's a daunting challenge to rebuild our stations, to rebuild our network, because during the previous 13 months, so many destructive and damaging actions took place. BAI itself lost thousands of members, an estimated 4,000. The audience figures plummeted to more than 40% before the September 11th tragedy. In reviewing the listener income from the few records that exist, the income has gone down by over $500,000. We believe it's even more from the year before of fiscal year 2000. Not only was our city in ruins, but so was our beloved station. And I remind you of the Bruce Springsteen song, "Rise Up, Come On, Rise Up." That is what we had to do, that is what we planned to do, and that is what we did by capitalizing on unparalleled opportunities here in the midst of a terrible tragedy and just a toxic atmosphere, as Tony has already said. When the staff returned about 7 weeks ago, we found the station and the network in a profound crisis with no money, and an estimated $350,000 in back bills alone for WBAI. There was no credit. Credit had been denied by nearly every vendor. They threatened to cut off the power at our transmitter the first week we came back. They threatened to cut off our telephones the second week we came back. They threatened to cut off our AP, Newswire services, the third week we came back. Bills that were 9 and 10 and 11 months old had not been paid. The money going down into that magic rabbit hole, never to be seen again, but the effect on the station was devastating. There was no Pacifica budget for any of the stations, as I can see, and certainly not for WBAI. The previous national board had not reviewed or approved a working fiscal plan for any of the stations, and it was like we were in free fall. Up there in the ether, without any goals, without any guidelines, without a fiscal framework from which to bring in income on listener support or direct mail or all of the other things that you have to do for a station. The magnitude of this difficulty was apparent, and it was simply a recipe for disaster. When the independent audit review came out in early February, we were there about 2 weeks at that point. It revealed our worst fears, that the debt was far greater than we thought. In fact, it was nearly $5 million, and that Pacifica faced the worst fiscal crisis in its history. We did at that time what Lou Hill said and advised many years ago, that in a crisis, you grow, because that's the only creative possibility. You've got to take that risk. You've got to take that chance. And you've got to expand where you can and think very carefully where you cannot. We opened up the doors to let the community back into community radio. And we opened up the airways to let their voices be heard for the first time in 13 months. We started the process of rebuilding. Yes, rebuilding. From day one, we created a Martin Luther King Jr. holiday and used it to help pay the staff because there was no money to do that. Used it to ask for donations for office supplies because there were no pencils, pens, even paper clips for us to do our work. Virtually nothing was there. The audience response was enthusiastic and it was generous, and we raised over $60,000 that day. What that said to us is that this was a definite signal that the goodwill is there, the integrity is there, and the real commitment to the Pacifica mission was there as we reaffirmed that on Martin Luther King's Day, and we also took steps to open our own operating accounts, our own special events accounts, and this, of course, flowed from the policy of the National Board and the Executive Director, Dan Coughlin, to give local control back to our stations. Within 2 weeks of returning, that is important. Local control is important. Local economy is important. This station and all the stations are founded on an independent funding base, and you can only be independent if you have local control at the local level. Within 2 weeks of returning, we organized the winter fundraiser and set a very ambitious goal. We did it before, in 1996. We said, we are going to be the first community radio station to raise $1 million. We did it. We set that goal in 2002, a goal of $1 million, and we monitored it. When we hit each benchmark at $100,000, at $500,000, at $800,000, we announced it on the air because we were so proud of the achievement of our listeners. We wanted them to share the information and the excitement with us. When we finished on February 22nd, our pledge goal was $997,000 plus $5,000 from our website, which brought us to over $1 million for WBAI's winter membership drive. And that's real money, and that's a real million. This made it, of course, one of the largest fund drives in our station's history, and the percentage of credit cards was way over 55%. The response was enormous. It was extraordinary. And we estimate that we have recaptured thousands of listeners who did not give last year. Why? Because you as a movement and we as some of the people working in that movement were very successful in that boycott. So thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars did not come in. But in February, with the change in the board and the change in the executive leadership, you responded. We captured many, many thousands of returned, renewed, rejoined listeners, and also quite a few thousand of brand-new listeners to the station. And major donors have been returning as well. People like Alec Baldwin gave us money this time. People gave $10,000 matching contributions, $5,000, $1,000. So we are building a base for major donors to help us with some of the big capital projects we have. But despite this great success, the fiscal crisis for the station and the foundation is a reality that we will have to live with this day, this year, this week, and for years to come. We need to have an accurate and timely financial report from the national office that will detail the exact specifics of the debt from the past year and to determine our current situation. As always, there are many options facing us, but in a crisis like this, really two. Cut back expenses, which is always hard because that usually means you've got to cut back on staffing or very basic necessities. The other one is also difficult, and that's to raise more money by taking advantage of every possible funding opportunity. And we will do that. We are committed to transparency in fiscal accounting and our reporting, to accountability and to responsibility, because running a Pacifica radio station is a privilege, it's an honor, but it's also a tremendous public trust. And we take that trust very, very seriously. We will have regular reports to the listeners from management and from staff. And we also, as I will speak later, want regular reports from our lab. And we already put that on the table within the first weeks of returning. We have always been proud at WBAI of our rainbow diversity. I strongly believe in affirmative action and equal opportunity and put that into effect when I became general manager years ago. So we have people from the Latino community, from the African American community, the Asian community, the Native American community as producers and programmers on our staff, and that commitment to diversity must be in place. No matter who is running WBAI, let the rainbow live. It must. We also had this serious financial situation and a toxic atmosphere that was very, very serious. It had gone on for 13 months there at the station, including the most agonizing racist comments when we had tried to build a diversity on the Pacifica mission for so many years. And to have that breached was one of the most hurtful things about this interregnum. We reached an agreement with AFTRA, that is now the union that represents the paid staff of the station, for a voluntary separation package to be offered to all staff across the board. Although ample time was given, AFTRA asked me to extend the deadline, and I did, because I wanted to give more time for people to consider this and to take that choice if they wanted to. In the end, there were 8 people who decided to take the separation buyout. And this group, all the paperwork and general releases and legal matters were completed by and around February 15. And the agreement has been acted for each payroll period. Other staff matters had to be dealt with in a different way. This had to do with programming changes that we made. This had to do with the return of the wake-up call program. And it had to do with producers who were formerly doing a morning show, whose services were no longer required, and who were released from their responsibilities, as well as others who were released for personnel reasons. We hired a conflict resolution specialist, a mediator, to come in and work with the staff, to do small sessions, large sessions. Her services have been extremely effective and very, very valuable, because the rage that was in some of the staff there was palpable. Not only that, it was dangerous and it was toxic. And it didn't provide the positive, productive workplace environment that all of us need coming back to rebuild the network with the kind of devastating debt that we faced. The return of WBAI's staff also included certain lateral transfers that we have worked on with the union, and this involves several positions that we call mission critical. We need these in order to operate. So we're working on that basis. We've got about 2 of them already worked out, and we will continue to finalize the others, because we've got a broadcast business, a broadcast entity, a community organization to do its work and to provide the public service necessary. The return of WBAI's history in terms of its programming was really achieved not on January 14th when the management returned, but on January 15th when the staff returned. And it was a who's who of WBAI's programming, extraordinary producers, journalists, staff members that included the Wake Up Call crew, Bernard White and Errol Maitland, Robert Knight, Janice K. Bryan, so many others in that group. Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash returned to our area. All of these programs had been banned. Radio Unnameable with the unnameable Bob Fass, a legend in his own time and in our time. David Rothenberg came back to our airway. So did Robert Knight. So did Bob Lederer with Health Action. So did Hard Work with Mike Fader. And so did Al Lewis with his wife Karen Lewis. When you look at this history, as Matthew Lazar and many of the historians will, the return of these kind of producers and journalists marks a really important historic point. And it's too bad we have to talk about return, because they never should have left WBAI from the very beginning. But they are back now. They came back home. And one of the highlights, of course, was the National Day of Broadcasting. We contributed to that. I'm proud of all of the general manager's work. I'm glad that it earned more than $200,000, not the $180,000 that we first heard. And I'm very delighted to say that we want to move on with other national days like this in the future. We come to the need and the aid of one station then they will come to our aid in need in future times. I know that will happen because we did it once. We can repeat that model again. One of the really key things that has happened here is that so many of the brilliant, unique voices that need to be on our air, like Professor Noam Chomsky, like Howard Zinn, like Michael Parenti, that have not been heard for 13 months and more, returned to the air during our fund drive right here in February of 2000. And they will continue to be on the air as long as some of us are there. You have no doubt about that. The producers and the program director had a meeting. Programming changes are being discussed. Ideas are being put on the table. And the program council will be reestablished as an advisory forum. We were in the fire zone, ground zero, of September 11th. That's a bad anniversary. 6 months is coming up on Monday. There is a tremendous need at the station for equipment, both new and replaced technology. The fiscal crisis meant that lots of things were neglected. Machines broke down, didn't work. New technology is already on board. And we've done an estimate where we need about $20,000 to replace some of that equipment. We need to finish off our performance phase, and that's going to take another $20,000 as well. And there are some special ways that we're going to go about that. I have had meetings with FEMA, with the Red Cross, with the Small Business Administration, and the other September 11th World Trade Disaster Organization to find out what funding we're eligible for. We're going for every nickel dime that we can get because we did have an economic impact from that. We were 10 blocks from it. The dust and the massive, almost crud in the air. And I say that because I saw people on September 11th moving up like zombies from Wall Street, and their eyelashes and their lips and their hair were coated with this cement-like pollen almost. That got into everything, and I'm sure it damaged our equipment. I am trying to make the case for an economic loss so that we can recoup some of this from this World Trade Aid. The advisory board, our relationships with them have always been strong. For 10 years, I never missed a lab meeting, and they never missed meeting at the station until they were locked out, arrested, and held in jail for 3 days by the previous administration. That can never happen again in WBAI or any other station's history. Their role and their responsibilities are stronger than ever. So we have had many meetings. We have had Sunday brunches. We have had outreach committee meetings. We have had a lab membership outreach campaign that they've started, all of which is settled on the basics: to increase the public's awareness of WBAI and its unique programming, to increase the subscriber base of WBAI by this work, and to increase the funding base, because hopefully some of these new people would become members of the station. I have advocated for, from the beginning, a report to the listeners by the lab on a regular monthly basis so that they can inform, educate, inspire, and bring people into this whole election season as never before. And we want that to happen as soon as possible. And finally, as they say at the end of a newscast, this is not the end of a newscast, the very treasure of WBAI and the foundation continue to face some of the hardest challenges on every front in our history. I've announced to the staff a while ago, about a week ago, a staff that I deeply respect, a staff whose work, great work, that I honor in this report, that I will be stepping down as general manager at WBAI. I value the leadership greatly of the lab, who has carried us through these 13 months and continues to do extraordinary work for the station, supporting it, doing outreach for it. But there is also work to be done on the national level, and over the next few months, I will be moving to work at the national level with Dan Coughlin and Verna, people of dynamic leadership and extraordinary vision who really will get this foundation back on its feet, help it to regrow, and in fact make it flourish as it never has before, because their hearts and their spirits and their minds are in the right place. They've got the great smarts, they've got the great courage, and they've got the great spirit to really help rebuild this station. So I say to you all, like Bruce Springsteen again, rise up, Pacifica, rise up, WBAI. Never let us lose this precious heritage, this precious treasure of our beloved WBAI and our beloved Pacifica ever again. Thank you.
KPFK is bringing you live coverage of the Pacifica National Board meeting in Los Angeles on 90.7 FM, KPFK, Los Angeles.
Interim General Manager of WBAI, getting a standing ovation here in Los Angeles from the people in the Virgil Middle School auditorium and from the Pacifica National Board members, all of whom are on their feet applauding. We have 11 of the 14 current board members who are in attendance here today, plus local advisory board chairs and other folks. Now we'll hear from,
Valerie has put in more than 20 years of service at WBAI.
This is Leslie Kagan, who is chair of the interim
WBAI
Pacifica National Board, and who is, of course, from the New York Signal Area.
So I think all of us, as you just saw, totally appreciate and thank you for all that work. And we know that what you've just announced is not a leaving, but just a shifting of the way you will continue to do that service. So thank you, Valerie. Again, I know we're running late, but that's okay. I want to call on Anthony McCall. I don't know where he is in the hall here. As I said before, the resolution passed at our January meeting established a committee, the WBAI committee. Anthony has been the chairperson of that committee, so he's going to make a brief report to the board about the committee's work and where that stands. And then we'll hear from the last chair, from Miguel Maldonado. So maybe you could just pull up a chair right here and use this one. Here, Sam will give you space. Thank you, Anthony.
Oh. Greetings, friends and comrades. This is truly a pleasure to be here today with you, an opportunity to participate in yet another historic part of our new legacy, the new beginning of Pacifica. I'm here today to speak on behalf of the WBAI committee, a committee that many of you have some information on, and I'll just provide a little bit of background today, give you a little bit of a sense of what the committee did, and may give perhaps people not only in our signal area but in some of the other signal areas a sense of just what this new democratization can mean on the ground at some points. The WBAI committee was conceived by the resolution passed by a majority of the reconstituted Pacifica National Board in December of 2001. This majority boldly moved to address the crisis that was WBAI by establishing a committee to investigate and recommend a range of corrective actions. After an unsuccessful court challenge by the board members representing the former majority, the committee became official in January of 2002. The committee is composed of four members from the PMB and five members from the lab. We're a nine-member group, and we'll mention those members very quickly at a later point. During the PMB's January meetings in New York City, the PMB passed by a majority, a comprehensive resolution comprised of the committee's initial eight recommendations, recommendations that many of you heard announced over the airwaves or were present in New York to discuss. This report summarizes the work to date from the perspective of the committee. First, each recommendation is very briefly identified, and then its status is cited, meaning how we've performed to this point on those recommendations. Where useful, the report also incorporates an interpretation of the committee's role and or discusses how it functioned in helping to implement the Pacifica National Board resolution. Additionally, the report discusses other relevant occurrences at WBAI since the January PMB. Because of time, we will not try to go through all that. I know Leslie appreciates that.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Very briefly, the status of the recommendations. As I said, we've cited in three, four word as opposed to 5 or 6 sentence paragraphs of the resolution. So bear with me. There were 8. Number one, we talked about the immediate removal of Robert Daughtry, the then station manager, acting station manager at WBAI, for cause. That has been done. Number two, the return of all the fired, banned, suspended, and otherwise removed people as of December 22nd, 2000. That has been completed. Number three, the lifting of all banning orders. That has been completed. Number four, WBAI lab, staff representatives, and the Pacifica executive director, acting executive director, all were going to participate in the design and implementation of a performance review procedure for WBAI general manager Valerie Vansler, as planned before she was illegally terminated in the December coup. That process is incomplete at this point, and I would recommend that we don't move on that. With respect to... Okay. Also, there were human resource specialists, as Valerie mentioned, was brought in to facilitate the intra-staff healing. That has been completed and is an ongoing part of the process, an invaluable part of the process. Additionally, there was the WBAI committee was supposed to study creative management schemes as management teams. That component is yet to be completed. However, there have been materials received from several sources on that. Number five, the pre-approval by a special committee of all hiring and firing, as well as approval of union negotiations, contracts, etc. That's an ongoing part of the work and has, in fact, been one of the items that has been most critical in this process going forward. Number six, voluntary recognition of unpaid staff under protection of the NLRA. That's an ongoing component. Recognition of paid staff by union representation. That is also ongoing and has occurred. Recognition of unpaid staff by union representation. At this point, the unpaid staff does not have a specific union representation, but they are in discussions with several prospects, and we hope to have some information from the unpaid staff on that within the next few weeks. Number seven, the labs holding regular public and executive meetings at the station. Yes, that is has occurred, and as Valerie pointed out, that's ongoing. B, management providing regular fiscal administrative reports to the lab. That is also happening and is ongoing. The executive director is working in cooperation with the committee to implement policies in a manner consistent with Pacifica and the law. That is also ongoing. So as you see, there's been quite a bit of accomplished under those 8 items and quite a bit more. Briefly, I want to just mention what we're doing in terms of the nature, the role, and function of the lab. The lab has already played several roles and filled a variety of necessary functions. It has drafted enabling language that permitted a swift transfer of authority at the station. It is currently a designated facilitator of the rather complex transition that is underway at WBAI. In that capacity, the committee members have met with formally and informally with station staff to hear concerns and answer questions, met with the WBAI human resource specialist on a number of matters ranging from staff to management, as well as on possible changes in the BAI organizational structure. Staff concerns with the station manager and the Pacifica management have been discussed at length with the executive director as well. You get a sense of the kind of activity. This may seem very unusual at some of the other stations, so you can begin to see what the management at WBAI not only had to put up with, but what they were willing to put up with and encouraged. Pursuant to the January resolution, we've also been involved with policy implementation, working collaboratively with both the station management and Pacifica management on a variety of personnel, union, financial, and staff and listener accessibility matters. We've also been an official monitor on this grand experiment in the listener movement. silently and sometimes not so silently, this single body with nine heads, yes, nine heads, was able to monitor things many times, performing due diligence regarding compliance with the Pacifica personnel matters or observing station management accessibility when unscheduled visits by a group of listeners concerned with the station's unannounced emergency fund drive occurred. Basically, what we're saying is that we've been able to be there as that silent partner watching when station management, without any prior knowledge, was able to be accessible and able to adapt to the situation because they grasped the importance of relating to the very newly engaged listener population, and that was something to see. The nine-headed monster, as I sometimes call us, also monitored developments around the WEF as the slack created by a critically needed but no-show department head was more than made up for as engaged, unpaid producers and journalists refused to permit our station to miss out on providing the quality coverage during what I call a made-for-Pacifica week of events. In concluding, the WBAI committee has not only been useful, at one point it became the key link in our rapid regaining of the station. Speaking of rapid, the committee is rapidly nearing the point when it should go out of existence, in my opinion. We will look at that matter closely in the weeks to come. Personally, I'd like to see the committee dissolved once we've established a satisfactory structures for meaningful staff and listener participation in the following three areas. On-air programming, perhaps through that program council. Number two, in-station magnet and outreach initiatives, things that involve the community initiatives. And thirdly, WBAI Pacifica affirmative hiring and search for hiring council. Specifically, we all understand the importance of not only getting high-quality people, but if we're going to dig deep in representing our communities, we must have the kind of participation and involvement from communities that, even though there are significant interests in having their involvement, they are still underserved and must be reached at a much higher level. Many of us, again, have gained further insight into listener inclusion and station and network democratization. Done well, it will make Pacifica stronger, more engaged, and with its mission as well as its constituents. The dialectics, friends and comrades, is conscious and empowered listeners will devise structures that enable and encourage productivity and creativity, yet ensure security of the mission at every level. Respected and entrusted, and enabled boards and staffs will be the most effective operators of a Pacifica and its stations on a day-to-day level. Finally, in the environment where hyperbole is often the rule rather than the exception, I'd like to say how impressed I have been with the quiet passion and calmness under duress of Valerie Van Isler. An engaged professional, she has continued to make sacrifices and to grow. She is confident yet listens closely to criticism. Her performance over the past 2 months in the face of crisis upon crisis has been outstanding. Friends and comrades, you should take a close look because Valerie leads by example. Thank you.
That was Anthony McCall, who is chair of the WBAI committee.